Hello, everybody. Yeah, this is Tom Ryan from American Hit Radio. Now, earlier in this series, we did something new by adding a special edition show that was not aired on our How Music Changed series on the radio, live, simply because we already covered that album in our Alternative Top 40 series on Wednesday. So here, with part 7 in our Pink Floyd series, we're going to do the same thing once again. This time, the album that we are dropping as a special to the How Music Changed website only is our coverage of Syd Barrett's first solo album, The Madcap Laughs. Enjoy. It's a great album. Fans of Pink Floyd might be thinking, as I say who it is, like, oh, great, it's like a Pink Floyd thing. This is Syd Barrett's debut album.
I love this album.
I love this
album.
It's called The Madcap Laughs. And this is, Syd, keep in mind, wrote every song but one on the debut Pink Floyd album. He had written every one of their first four or five singles. He was responsible for all of their hits in the beginning. His input slacked off a little bit by the second album, and the next thing you know, poof, he's not in the band any longer. That was by, say, around early 1968. So it was a quick run for him. And the reason was that the 60s took a toll on Syd quite heavily.
Syd, drugs did.
Well, the 60s, because of the fact that the 60s were such a drug-centric and drug-friendly era, Syd did not hold back on psychedelics, and they left a mark. And he became very difficult for the band to work with. There were, like, Pete Townsend himself said that he once went to see a Pink Floyd show, and he watched Syd play one chord for an hour. While the band played everything else, he just kept strumming one chord. And Pete, he even said it was unbelievable. And it was, in some strange way, it was kind of brilliant. He even brought Eric Clapton back the next night to see it with him.
Wow.
But there were other shows in San Francisco where he would get on stage with the band and he would put on his guitar. And while the band played the song, all that he would do was slowly detune his guitar.
Wow.
The whole set. So if after a while the band got to the point where they were going to gigs and they realized, you know, Syd's not in the car, I said, well, shall we get him? And it was like, why bother? And that was it. He was out of the band. So this album is a result of post-Pink Floyd production going through five different human beings to try to coax the album out of Syd that he had in him. And it was obviously like pulling teeth. This album is so far from normal that I don't even know if the word normal applies to anything on it. The songs sound as though they come from a place where Syd was more or less letting his wildest imagination wander as wildly as he possibly could. Most of the songs started as solo acoustic numbers, where eventually musicians were brought in to put parts on top of the solo acoustic numbers. So that's not an easy thing to do, especially if you're doing it on top of a Syd Barrett track where things are changing. He might stop in the middle and start talking. I mean, it was something like this that actually had a lot to do with getting him kicked out of the band in the first place. There was a story that his last rehearsal with the band, he had told him that he wrote that his new song is called Have You Got It Yet? And he went to show it to the band. So slowly the musicians would join in, but then Syd would do something that rendered the song unplayable. And say, oh, wait, no, do it again. Like, okay, so we'll do it like this. And then Syd would change it again. And this went on and on for like a ridiculously long time until the band realized, oh, that's thus the title.
It was a big joke.
The whole thing was like, Syd, yeah, just really pretty much just,
taking the mickey.
Having a leg up, in a sense, you know, basically with the band. But, you know, it was also part of what you'll hear on this record. There's a lot of this that is incredibly spontaneous and weird, but brilliant in its own way. So let's kick it off. This album took about a year and a half to record. with Sid taking huge breaks in between and producers abandoning the record for huge periods of time. So it started right after he left the band and then picked up again and went for a while, right on up to late 1969, when they finally decided to put a cap on it, so to speak, and released it in January of 1970. Did not chart in America until it was re-released in 1974 as a double album with a second album, and then it reached the stellar peak of number 163 as a re-release. But in America, we just had moved on from Sid and his antics, which is a shame because it's really beautiful and it really is influential in terms of what the 60s psychedelic experience resulted in. Here's the opening track. It's called Terrapin.
I really love you, and I mean you. The star above you, crystal blue. Well, oh baby, my hair's on end about you. Okay. I wouldn't see you, and I love to. I fly above you, yes I do. Well, oh baby, my hair's on end about you. Floating, bumping noses, dodge a tooth, the fins are luminous. Fangs all round the clown is dark below. Sunlight's good for us. Cause we're the fishes, and all we do but move about is all we do. Well, oh baby, my hair's on end about you. Thank you. I really love you, and I mean you. The star above you, crystal blue. Well, oh baby, my hair's on end about you.
Right. One of the songs that was recorded in the beginning after
a very special turtle.
Yes. Well, after the first producer had already dropped out, Peter Jenner was part of the management of the band. So when Sid quit, he actually quit with him, thinking, I'm going to stick with Sid. Well, oops. Not exactly the most remarkable business decision of all time to leave Pink Floyd to follow Sid, whose career was obviously going to be very difficult to revitalize. Peter Jenner started trying to produce the album, and he quickly decided that after a few dates, and Barrett decided to stop recording, Jenner said, you know what, me too. And at that point, Malcolm Jones, who was the head of a new label on EMI called Harvest, volunteered to pick up, figuring that there's got to be a way to do this. It's just too clever. He's too good. And in the beginning, the sessions with Malcolm Jones went quite well. That song, Terrapin, is one of the weirder songs from the beginning of Sid's work with the second producer. But it is Sid playing the acoustic guitar and then overdubbing the lead guitar onto his own song, so he actually was able to follow himself. So at this point in time, things are happening in a credible way. In fact, the same day that that song was recorded, he also recorded this next track and added overdubs later. And this one, I think, was remarkably successful on that very productive day. This is called, the words are very funny. Hope you enjoy this. It's called No Good Trying.
It's no good trying to place your hand where I can't see, because I understand that you're different from me. Yes, I can tell that you can't be what you pretend. And you're rocking backwards, and you're rocking towards the red and yellow mane of a stallion horse. We'll be right back.
Honey, love you, honey, little honey, funny, sunny morning. Love you more funny, love in the skyline, baby. Ice cream, excuse me, I seen you looking good the other evening. Oh, you dig it, had to smile just an hour or so. Are we in love like I think we'd be? It ain't a long rhyme, it took ages to think. I think I'll hurl it in the water, baby. Honey, love you, honey, little honey, funny, sunny morning. Love you more funny, love in the skyline, baby. Ice cream, excuse me, I seen you looking good the other evening. Suppose sometime that day would be swinging along over across to me. Honey, love you, honey, little honey, funny, sunny morning. Love you more funny, love in the skyline, baby. Ice cream, excuse me, I seen you looking good the other evening. Pieces, little creepy, we shine so sleepy, so whoopee, that's how you look. Honey, love you, honey, little honey, funny, sunny morning. Love you more funny, love in the skyline, baby. Ice cream, excuse me, I seen you looking good the other evening.
I really want to know if you're smiling as you listen to this. I mean, I laugh out loud when I hear this.
Oh, you're guffawing over there.
But I laugh with, I mean, it's so, I mean, I really get deep pleasure out of this album. I just think it's great. It's great because it's just thought of, it's centered in a place that is not where most music is created. It's in its own universe. And hearing the musicians trying to hang on to the crazy time changes and everything else, well, you know, Sid dropped a beat. And then the drummer's actually smart enough to recognize it and shift immediately at that moment. It's pretty clever. A lot of the guys that were helping at this point was Robert Wyatt and the Soft Machine. I don't know the exact details about which sessions, who was on who and on what songs. But those two in a row are the two that impressed me the most, maybe, on the album. No Good Trying. Just a brilliant psychedelic revelry, and he sings it like it's a private joke. It's like he gets it and he's waiting for the other musicians to basically, you know, get in on it and laugh with him. They'd say to him, like, okay, well, Sid, what key is this in? And you go, yeah, that's funny. Didn't even want to get into it. Love You was like, I mean, love you, honey, love you, honey, love you. Loving the skyline, baby. Ice cream, excuse me. I've seen you looking good the other evening. What a bizarre. It's like seeing multicolored lights on a Christmas tree, like a big mess of lights just thrown at the tree. And that's what Sid has done with that song. I love it. All right. Play our way through the rest of the album. Got a couple more. Let's play this track, which was, by the way, Terrapin, No Good Trying, and Love You all came from that same date of April 11, 1969. So that was the real productive sessions. Now you start hearing, like, a couple of days later, as things begin to change and things get a little bit more difficult. Recorded about a week later, this track is called No Man's Land.
You would hold your head up high. You even try. You would hold another hand. Oh, understand. They even see me under call.
we under all, we awful, awful crawl to Hemaya. Don't see me cry, just searching you even try. I can make you smile. If it's there, will you go there too? When I live, I die. They even see me under coal. We under all, we awful, awful crawl because of you. To see me be.
Those two songs back to back might tell 95% of the story of this album in terms of what was happening behind the scenes. The first track, No Man's Land, was produced by Malcolm Jones, the head of Harvest Records, who had a real deep interest in giving Sid an excellent album, despite the fact that he knew he was working with somebody who was not fully there all the time. He was coming in with enough creativity and such a spark that Jones believed he would be able to capture it. And he was willing to be patient with him and try to get it done. And the first four songs that we heard were all really from like about the first week of sessions. The initial recording anyway was from the first week that they had spent together. Now it took a considerable amount of time for them to get the overdubs added, maybe like another 3 or 4 months later. And in some cases anyway, but Malcolm Jones was happy with the way that things were proceeding until it began to fall apart. And when he left, this was when Sid's old bandmates stepped in and said, well, let's see what Sid is up to. And then they started to basically, when they realized that Jones was ready to like, was feeling like insecure about whether or not the project was even going to be working, they said, well, we'll do it. So next thing you know, Roger Waters and David Gilmour step in and start to produce it, and you get a totally different quality. You get a song like Dark Globe, where they're basically just saying, go ahead, do whatever you want, and we're going to record you. And if your voice cracks or if the guitar goes off a little bit, we're not going to worry about it. We're going to try to basically show you as you are. And this eventually became one of the biggest problems between the people who I, you know, who had Sid's best interest in mind is what it ultimately came down to. Like, you know, Sid wasn't of a mind to decide for himself, considering the way that he was doing, making the work sessions so weird for everybody involved, not letting the musicians know what the chords were, not telling anybody how the songs went, not letting them know what the key were, not letting anybody rehearse or record, or getting, no, you cannot re-record your overdub. The first one is all we need. Thank you very much. Goodbye. And so they all had to work within Sid's parameters, which were really bizarre. And that's what frustrated Jones. And it sort of came to people's mind that maybe Waters and Gilmour were, in a sense, trying to basically undermine Sid in some way. Say, like, okay, you know, you're going to make this difficult for yourself, then we're going to just let it be. You know, you're not going
to
make,
allow him to fail.
Right. You're convinced that that's what you want to do, then we'll give it to you and see what, how do you like that? And Jones was deeply insulted by it, by the way that it came out. And I, in retrospect, disagree, because I think that a lot of the rawness that they added adds ultimately to the charm. That last song, Dark Globe, really, it's like really probably one of the most self-aware songs on the album. And one of the saddest. In moments of clarity, Sid must have been all too aware of his deteriorating situation. As he's singing, won't you miss me? Wouldn't you miss me at all? On, you know, on that song, it's like he's saying, I know I'm going away. I know I'm not going to be around. If I can't keep doing this. And despite the sadness, though, he manages to create an album that's fleshed out with clever wordplay and humor. The Madcap Laughs is the name of the record, but if you listen with sympathetic ears, you'll find yourself laughing with him, not at him. This next song, brilliant example. Tell me this song isn't hysterically funny. It's him, again, poking fun at himself a little bit. He's on a date with a girl, and he plays a song for her. She doesn't like it much, and she tells him so. So then he finds himself talking to her sister, and she likes his song. And that makes him really happy. It's called Here I Go.
This is a story about a girl that I knew. She didn't like my songs, and that made me feel blue. She said a big band is far better than you. She don't rock and roll. She don't like it, she don't do the stroll. Well, she don't do it right. Well, everything's wrong, and my patience was gone when I woke one morning and remembered this song. Kinda catchy. I hope that she will talk to me now and even allow me to hold her hand and forget that old band. I strolled around to a pad. Her light was off,
and that's bad. Her sister said that my girl was gone. But come inside, boy, and play, play, play me a song. I said, yeah, here I go. She's kinda cute, don't you know that? After a while of seeing her smile, I knew we could make it, or make it in style. This song and mine, others too. So now you see my world is, 'cause of this tune. What a boon this tune. I'll tell you soon, we'll be lying in bed, happily wed, and I won't think of that girl, what she said.
That's what I mean by laughing with them. I mean, it's so childlike and just so
very innocent. Yes.
Yeah, and I'm sure that it's that the real story was much darker, but the way that he presents it is beautiful. We're playing the entire album, "The Madcap Laughs," by Syd Barrett, released just 2 days after the new year of the new decade, January 3rd, 1970, when it was released. Didn't do too well here in America, but now it's a hugely popular underground album. Influences the careers of many different songwriters. Syd is an incredibly influential writer, and you can see plenty of reasons why all over this album. This next track was actually the song that was released as a single from the album, produced actually by Syd himself, until David Gilmour edited a few overdubs and such to basically get it into shape. But the song is entitled "Octopus." Thank you.
I heard you singing in the midnight air. My book is closed, I read no more. Watching the fire dance on the floor. I've left my book, I've left my room. For I heard you singing through. Singing and singing a merry air. Lean out of the window, go.
See, to my mind, anybody who was a fan of early Pink Floyd would have to love those tracks. I mean, you can see the genius of the mind that wrote songs like See Emily Play in those songs. It's like a fractured looking glass version of See Emily Play, which was a sort of a fractured looking glass of pop music in the first place. So it's sort of like this. It's deeply beautiful in its own way, but it really does take an open mind. It's too easy to look at it and say, "Oh, it's just so happenstance and ridiculous." It's almost like a dream state if you could allow yourself to basically just totally let your subconscious mind go, and you end up with something. This could be it if you were lucky. But this is where the album takes a very severe turn. Now, the next four songs are the songs that were recorded by Gilmore and Roger Waters. And they show, like I say, the warts and all side of it. And you wonder if perhaps they did or did not have Sid's own best interest at heart, considering what you've heard up until this point, where I would say that the album was very reflective of what Sid was capable of doing with a good controller that he had up until this point, the producers who were helping him. Gilmore and Roger Waters open up the floodgates, though, sort of, so to speak, and they just say, you're on your own. And they come up, here's two songs back to back, and I think you'll see what I mean. The first is called Long Gone, and we'll follow that up with She Took a Long, Cold Look at Me.
She was long gone, long, long gone. She was gone, gone. The bigger they come, the larger her hand, till no one understand why for so long she'd been gone. And I stood very still by the windowsill, and I wondered for those I love still. I cried in my mind where I stand behind the beauty of those in her eyes. She was long gone, long, long gone. She was gone, gone. The bigger they come, the larger her hand, till no one understands why for so long she'd been gone. And I borrowed a page from a leopard's cage, and I prowled in the evening sun's blaze, her head lifted high to the light in the sky, the opening dawn on her long gone, long bigger they come, the larger her hand. Tell no one understand why for so long she'd been gone. And I stood very still by the windowsill, and I wondered for those I loved still. I cried in my mind where I stand behind the beauty of those in her eyes. She was long gone, long, long gone. She took a long, cool look at me and smiled and gazed all over my arm. She loves to see me get down to ground. She hasn't time just to be with me. A face between all she means to be extreme, just to be extreme. A broken pier on the wavy sea. She wonders why all she wants to see. But I got up and I stomped around and hit the piece where the trees touch the ground. The end of truth that lay out the time spent lazing here on a painting green. A mile and more in a foreign clime to see farther inside of me. Sky, I breathe as the water streams over me.
So there you have a take of She Took a Long Cold Look and Long Gone. Where they keep in some of the speaking, as you can see as well. I mean, what they had to say about it was simple. I mean, they said Sid was very difficult. This is David Gilmour. We got that very frustrated feeling. Look, it's your career mate. Why don't you do something? The guy was in trouble and was a close friend for so many years before then. But then they said, as they were doing it, perhaps we were trying to show what Sid was really like, but perhaps we were trying to punish him. And the previous producer Malcolm Jones, when he heard it, said, I felt angry. It's like dirty linen in public and very unnecessary and unkind. You didn't hear exactly what they're referring to yet. I think these next couple of songs will give you an idea of just what they meant by those words. The first track is called Feel.
Feel, take one.
Oh, so alone. I want to come home. Oh, find me inside of a nocturne, the blonde. How I love you to be by my side. They wail, the crab on her side. She straggled a bridge by the water. She misses her crawl, Polly grew, Eddie aside in a dell. Inside an ivy, the lonely one, my bride. How I leave on the waddling wheel. They fail, a gasp, shringing a bad bell's ringing. The angel, the daughter. Thank you.
waggled a bridge by the water.
Last one was Diamond, actually.
All right.
Okay, so there. Bit of an odd song, but this next one is the one that really takes the cake. Look, I am a musician. I work in the recording studio. And a lot of times, a recording studio is a place where people will go to try to, you know, achieve something that is a little bit difficult that you wouldn't want to do live because you can simply erase it and do it again. So what's happening on this next track is Sid really trying to do exactly that. He's trying to sing a melody that is ridiculously difficult. It's ridiculous that he wrote the song. The whole thing is crazy. But he goes for it. And rather than take out the bits where he's struggling and trying to figure out a way to get this thing down on tape, Waters and Gilmore decide that they're going to keep it in. It is definitely a way of laughing at him. And it's easy to hear it and consider it to be mockery. But ultimately, to me, I hear it as this huge success for Sid, because when it finally does start to roll, he hits the notes. He stops once to fix it. It's like he's learning the song. It should have been a rough take, but they turned it into the album track. Sort of a rude thing, but ultimately, I think Sid wins. I think it's beautiful. We'll play that and the last track, the track that ends the album, which is called Late Night. So the song, the weird one, which I hope you can listen to, and you can laugh. It's okay. But I hope you enjoy it, too, and I hope you see that there's beauty in it. It's called If It's In You, and we'll follow that with Late Night. Hope you enjoyed the show here at 90.3 WHPC. We'll see you next Friday, everybody.
Yes, I'm thinking. Yes, I'm thinking. Look, you know, I'll start again. I'll start it again. It's just the fact, you know, of going through it. I mean, if we could cut. Yes, I'm thinking of this. Yes, I am. Puddle Town. Tom was the underground. Hold you tight. You're so close. Yes, you are. Please hold on to the steel rail. Colonel with gloves drafts leeches. He isn't love on Sunday's mail. All the fives crock Henrietta. She's a mean go-getter. Got to write her a letter. Did I wink? Did I wink? King of this, I am yum, yummy, yum, dumb, yummy, yum, yum, yum. Yes, I'm there. Skeleton kiss to the steel rail. Fleas in Pamela gloves, drafts, leeches, chugging along with a funnel of steam. All the fives crock Henrietta. She's a mean go-getter. Got to write her a letter. When I woke up today and you weren't there to play, then I wanted to be with you. When you showed me your eyes, whispered low of the skies, then I wanted to stay with you. Inside me I feel alone and unknown.
the way you kiss will always be a very special thing to me. When I lay still at night, seeing stars high and light, then I wanted to be with you. When the rooftops shone dark, all alone saw a spark, spark of love just to stay with you. Inside me I feel alone and unreal, and the way you kiss will always be a very special thing to me. If I mention your name, turn around on a chain, then the sky opens out for you. When we grew very tall, when I saw you so small, then I wanted to stay with you. Inside me I feel alone and unreal, and the way you kiss will always be a very special thing to me.